Welcome into a new Buff Stampede Radio. Adam Munster Tiger, the publisher of BuffStampede.com, joined as always by football analyst William Gardner. William, we've got a lot to talk about today on the show. And there was somebody in the chat that just put in there that Jerry Rooster 22 looks like Ezra Christensen is back in Boulder. So that's something I saw that right before we went live. I've got to vet this. So I'm not going to report on anything right now, but that would be a huge get back into the program if that's true.
Yeah, I think he's I think he's the best of the defensive tackles we brought in. I mean, he's about, 280, 290, so a little bit smaller than what the ideal, but I think he's got the kind of play in that reminds me a lot of Shane Cokes that makes things happen. Not necessarily like you take defensive tackles and you got a lot of different varieties. You got Chidoze Nwankwo, who's, basically a 5'11", 6 foot, 300, and he's just stout. He's going to take up two blockers and not be moved, right? And then you got other guys like Jordan Carroll was like this, was get off blocks and get in the backfield and make things happen. So I think Christensen's one of those guys. I think he's the best of the defensive tackles we brought in this year. So to be able to get him back would be a huge deal. We really don't have enough on the defense at defensive tackle yet with what, five or six guys. You know, we had what we went into season last year, and you and I felt like we had eight guys that could play, and it wasn't enough. And maybe last year was a crazy fluke with the injuries, but who knows?
I'm going to make this a quick point. They got to figure out eligibility because it's not fair to these young men that, like, Zarian McGill, until a few weeks ago, was still like, I don't know if I can come back. Kareem right. Harden still doesn't know if he can come back. You know, there's too much unknown as far as eligibility goes. And I'm not just talking selfishly from a reporter standpoint. It's pretty annoying from that standpoint. But you got to think about these young men and let them be able to kind of plan for their future and not be kind of in this state of limbo, right?
Well, and how can you not know? I mean, it's not like it's a – you either make a decision. Well, what's the damn decision you make?
There's these waivers that get passed. And now with NIL, it makes sense for Azarian McGill to stay in college because there's a good chance he could make more money playing at CU than, you know, he's going to try to make the NFL. And he's a very solid player. Size-wise, I don't know. Daniel Munier was on practice squads with a kind of a – he was a different player, but you know what I mean? Like, well, just a little bit undersized. Yeah.
Munier, I think he did close to 10 years in the NFL, you know, and McGill's bigger than he is. So there are different kinds of centers, and Munier could play some guard. I think McGill could do that too, but you want to give guys as much opportunity, but like you said, really the thing that matters is make a darn decision, you know, give them some, it's January and they're running out of time to make these decisions. Because there's deadlines, so I don't understand why it's such a big problem. And then it's so all over the board too. You know, you got guys playing in their seventh and eighth year, you know, and then you got other guys that they can't get that fifth or sixth. So I don't know. It's a mess. It needs to be fixed.
Yeah. Before we dive into the meat of what we've seen through the first week of Colorado's spring semester strength and conditioning plus testing under Andrew Swayze and company, let's give a shout out to Brady Russell. He's heading on to the Super Bowl with the Seattle Seahawks facing the New England Patriots. Did you watch any NFL this weekend?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, I was kind of watching I didn't go to the Bronco game because it's too damn cold for me to be at that thing. But, I went to the store yesterday. I went to King Supers I go to, and a guy checking out had a New England Patriots shirt on. And he's like, hey, it looks like people are sad in Denver today. Why is that? I was like, you fixing to get your ass whooped, man.
Yeah.
And he laughed. Yeah, he laughed at it. You know, he's like, I know, you know, I'm trying to be nice about it, but I got to represent my team. I said, I respect that. That's all right. But, you know, as long as I'm here, I'll jump in to save you. After that, you're on your own.
I do admit I was cheering for Nate Landman and the Rams just because Nate has a bigger role, obviously, with the Rams. And Brady, not to discredit, like, his special teams role. He's been, a special teams captain there. So it's been cool to see him have that success, I guess. We got to root for the Seahawks now, huh?
Well, we don't have to do anything, but I think it's, you know, Brady Russell's story is you know, Nate Landman is pretty standard, came in, kicked ass, did well, you know, but, you know, Brady Russell's a walk on, you know, and some people on our boards and everything else, some people will never get past that walk on label. Even now that he's in the NFL, you know, but he worked his backside off and made it. You know, and that's a special thing to me.
We have so much to talk about because we've got some footage from behind the scenes with Well Off Media, the pregame show, and Reach the People Media with some of the footage they put out there from the first week. Last week was a lot about testing, a lot about kind of figuring out a baseline for these guys. And then you saw, you know, the coach introductions, and then yesterday the puke buckets were out. Let's start going back and forth and just sharing some of our thoughts and things that stood out to us while watching some of that footage.
Yeah. I mean, I want to start off, you know, anybody that's listening in the chat room or whatever, and you're saying to yourself, big deal, same thing year after year, same thing. They look great. Well, I don't know. You know, I don't know what to tell you. It matters. I think it matters to watching this year. To me, watching it with a little bit of a different eye to see how they work with each other and how they compete with each other. And I guess I'm looking more for signs of more teamwork and more leadership or whatever than I have in the past. But still, there's so one thing that, you know, I like made a lot of notes, but I was watching it, like so many new names and new faces and stuff. I had to keep looking at what's that name, and I'd look onto your transfer tracker, you know.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I'd be like, oh, okay, that's that guy. All right, you know, I didn't know we had a guy with that name. I guess we, yeah. But all those names, you know, like 42 names plus all the other names that didn't pick us came through in like 2 weeks, you know. And it was at the time, each one was exciting, but it became such a flood that there was no way to really get them all in my head. And then, of course, I, you know, we didn't see them until we start seeing them here, you know. And so you start able to make some things that you can see with your own eyes and put faces to things, like Ernest Campbell, who can run like the wind blows. But I don't know, he looks to me now, he looked to me like a little Snoop Dogg. Did you see his? He now Snoop is like 6'6", and Ernest Campbell's like 5'6". So the comparison only goes so far. But facially, I was like, damn, he looks like Snoop.
I'm pulling up the photo.
And of course, you'll pull up a photo and it probably won't look at all like him. But, you know, in that moment, in that video, I was like, damn.
Yeah.
But he and Quentin Gibson,
I think. Pretty skinny. Ernest is pretty short and stout. But yeah, I see some similarities there. I'll give you a little bit of that. But yeah.
Well, if you stretched Ernest out to be 6'6", he'd be skinny too.
There you go. Yeah, that's where it's at. Those James Madison kids can fly, right? Justin Anglin, 4'4", Emmanuel Ogu, 4'4", 6". Those guys were showing out there. I think that's maybe a misnomer, is that there's not guys at that level that have athleticism. You're seeing it so much more, especially right now, because there was kind of this COVID backup in terms of guys being able to get onto Power Four rosters. There's some really skilled players at the FCS level still. Maybe that'll change a little bit when this, I think this is like last year was maybe the last year of like this extra COVID year that a lot of guys got. I think that you're going to start to see a little bit more of the FCS to FBS disparity show itself more, just because you've had a lot of guys backed up in this system. Again, going back to eligibility, just not being clear year to year. And a lot of these guys don't have a spot, even if they're talented.
Well, I think you're still going to see a lot of really good athletic players that are young at the FCS and below levels, because guys get missed coming out of high school all the time. But in the modern era, what happens is if you come and in that first year or two at the lower level, you show it, you're going to get an opportunity to move up to the next level. And what you might see at the FCS is guys dropping down who didn't live up to that potential at the Power Four level and dropping back down. So you're going to see kind of a, you know, mixing effect. And I don't know, maybe you end up about the same. But one thing that'll change is, like, you look at the NFL now, and there's lots of guys who played and graduated from FCS schools. I doubt you see that anymore, because they're going to move up when they do well, and they probably won't be at the FCF by the time they graduate.
Yeah.
You know,
one guy that came from a lower level, Zach Atkins, tight end, Division II, not even FCS, below that, from a solid Division II program, came in, earned the starting tight end job, ran a 4.5, and got praise from Swayze. He ran across the field to show Coach Prime. Coach Prime gave him a hug. That was a cool moment to see for somebody that I think has a pretty high ceiling. You know, I don't want to get expectations out of whack with him, but I think he's going to have a pretty good senior season.
Well, you know, this is the time for expectations, and there's nothing to prove you wrong until we get to actual games. So I don't see any, you know, some people like, blah, 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 whatever. I don't know. If you can't get excited in January and February, what the hell are you doing as a football fan? Because this is the time when everybody's good, you know, and things will weed themselves out. But you look at an Atkins who's, you know, I guess probably about 6'4", 250, and he ran a 4.5. That's crazy. You know, I mean, that's the kind of thing that makes him a mismatch nightmare because he's too big for defensive backs and too fast for linebackers, which is exactly what you're looking for at a big time tight end. So that's a good one. You know, another guy I want to, you know, we'll talk about a lot of guys who look good and whatever. And getting back to these 40s, I want to say right from the start, we're not idiots. We know it's hand timed. We know electronically timed it'll be slower. We're fully aware of that, but you know what? It's still fun to be excited about how fast these guys are running these things. And really what you take from it for me is we got some speed on this team. We got a lot of speed on this team on both sides of the ball. But a guy like Emmanuel Iziogu, you know, at 250 running a 4.46. Now, I look at that and I think to myself, really, frankly, as an edge player, defensive end type, the only thing that really matters is his first 10 yards. Now, they don't give us those breakdowns, and they don't run that as a test. I always wonder why the football always does the 40 because it's not really relevant. But what I want to know about Iziogu is what does he do in those first five steps, because that's what dictates whether he's going to be able to beat tackles on a speed rush and things like that. But it sure is exciting to see that kind of 4.46 speed out of a guy that big playing the edge, you know. So that's what you take from it, I guess. Not necessarily that it's would translate to track speed or whatever, but you know he's a fast guy.
Yeah. I've never watched wrestling, and to each their own, if that's what is entertaining to you. But Ben Finneseth goes out to the WWE, does a week of tryouts. I'll tell you, William, in the future, if Ben Finneseth is part of some kind of wrestling thing, I'm gonna tune into that because he's one of my favorites.
Seems kind of little to me, but I don't know. I don't know what their sizes are and all that. but keep, I'll also keep in mind that, like, when we talk about Finneseth and then we go back and we talk about who's our guy? Sean Kenny, the center, mm-hmm. who is a college wrestler. That ain't the same sport by any means.
No.
It ain't the same thing at all. Sean Kenny is a real wrestler. You know, it plays a sport that applies itself to football. Professional wrestling is Hollywood. It's mostly acting. So I don't know. I think.
But you still put your body through a lot of stuff. That's the one thing I will give those guys. You know, again, I'm not a huge fan, and get thoughts put on anybody that does, but. Ben Finneseth said that his body was more beat up than fall camp. So they definitely put them through the ringer. They were trying to make those guys quit during that process.
Yeah. So
in terms of, Lauren, the head trainer, one of the trainers on the staff, said they did 75 exit physicals. They've got 12 high school additions, 40 guys left on the roster, 83 guys, that are expected part of the mix, and we don't have everybody here yet. So she said they're rocking and rolling. You got to go back to the fact that it's pretty impressive they have this many guys in that weight room and in that indoor practice facility right now, given kind of how the odds were stacked up against them going into the spring semester.
Yeah, there's 80 some guys, I think, including walk-ons, and they'll be by fall camp. Well, I don't know who
might actually be. I think 83 is now, but it's that's including walk-ons, and there's a healthy amount of walk-ons. So they're going to be probably around 100. They're at 80 scholarship guys right now, as far as my count goes.
And I would bet that they add four or five more between now and camp. But then you don't know if all these guys will stick until then. So we'll see. But it is fun to see all those numbers, which means a lot more competition. There's some things that sort of stood out to me that I saw with different people and different with the coaching staff. So I think it's fun to look at that and see all those new faces and new guys in there. It's interesting to see them all. They're all just trying to get to know each other, that's sort of the process they'll go through over the next 5 weeks when they're getting ready for spring football, that they're going to get to know each other real well. Because like you said, they're going to try. It's all like Swayze and his team. It's all figured out, and it's all scientific. And if you're doing this, you do that, and blah blah blah. And they don't they're not trying to make them puke. They're just trying to push them to their limits. And of course, there has to be, you have to be careful with it too, because there's certain downsides to pushing too hard. And so you have to be aware of those things as well. That's where the training staff comes in, very helpful as well.
Just don't puke on the turf. That's yeah. That's the rule right now.
Yeah. Well, lots of, sounds like lots of rules, but we'll see.
Yeah. You know, yeah.
Rules are only as valuable as the enforcement thereof.
Right.
Rules on paper don't mean a damn thing. Laws on paper don't mean a damn thing. It's how and how fairly they're enforced. But you know, and some of the things. One guy I want to mention before we move on that I saw who's looking really good and has always looked really good is Kylan Salter. Because this is a guy that stuck it out. Given how things worked out with his brother, I don't think it would have surprised anybody if he left. But he stuck it out, and he's here, and he's back. And, you know, he's got the body of an NFL linebacker, and I don't know that many people know it, but he was a huge special teams contributor last year. He was fifth in snaps on special teams and fourth in points. So he really added to the team in that perspective, and I would really love to see him. He's going to be a guy that I'm keeping an eye on as kind of one of my favorites this year, you know, because he's here because he wants to be a Buff, and I would love to see him step up and become the linebacker I hope him to see. And of course our linebacker room needs that as well, but he's one that has a little special place to me because he stuck around, you know, him and Yaya and all those guys, good and whatever.
Yeah, that's going to be the case, I think, going forward in this transfer portal era. If you go through your entire eligibility someplace and have success, you're going to be revered there for a long time. So there is that other side of, I guess, this new modern college football era. I'll tell you, before and after these workouts, William, they're still getting creme de la creme dining up there. Chef Carl Solomon, I can't watch these videos with being hungry, because I'm heading up to the kitchen. Like, he's still bringing it. It's amazing the type of cuisine that these guys get on a daily basis. I'm so jealous.
Yeah, they get, you know, and it's all, again, it's, you know, it's scientifically designed, I think, by our head chef in terms of what they need for their bodies and what they don't need necessarily so much. So they get the variety to eat well, you know, and still like everything they're getting. So that's a good point. Somebody mentioned in the chat a couple things, was like that they're being safe out there, like letting Samu walk sometimes. Now, that's a kid that's got to get some extra work in and drop about 50 pounds or well, maybe not that much. But, you know, some of these guys clearly need a lot more work than others. And I think it's also true that, you know, a lot of these kids, probably their first time at altitude aside from their visit here. So that they're going to have to get used to that a little bit, too.
Yeah. Some people saying that Salter moved to edge. I'll look into that as well after the show. I would imagine that was something that they put on one of the channels that I did not get a chance to see. But, yeah, try to consume as much content as I could this past week.
And we'll see, which maybe suggests that one or two of those edge guys might move inside a linebacker. I think it's all preliminary until you get into spring ball. I've seen lots of changes of positions over the years, and they don't end up staying there, but I think they're looking for, you know, they got a lot of edge guys. Look at this real quick. I think they're looking to get guys on the field in places where they can make a big difference. And so if Kylan Salter maybe doesn't have the instincts of an inside linebacker, playing edge is a lot easier if you've got the skills for it, because, you know, edge or outside linebacker, there's only two reads. You know, it's either coming towards you or it's going away from you, and it's either run or it's pass, right? So it's fairly simple. Whereas at an inside linebacker, it's all coming at you one way or the other, and you got to figure it out instantly and make the right decisions. So playing edge takes a lot of the mental part out of it and makes it a lot easier for guys who have the kind of superior athleticism. So that's probably an idea to get Kylan Salter on the field and look for your best combinations out there. But we've had a lot of guys on that edge, and it's going to be interesting to see how it all sort of sorts itself out.
Between Brennan Marion and Josh Niblett, the Buffs got themselves a couple of cowboy coaches. Coach Niblett was talking about how his hobby is horseback riding, and Brennan Marion's in the offensive meeting room listening to some country music. So a couple good personalities there joining the staff. It looked like DeKalen Taylor squad 455. Did I miscalculate that? Based, it was four plates on each side and a 25, and then the bar.
Yeah, that would be it. That would be a yeah. So that's going to end up being a multiple 25 one way or the other. But that sounds about right. I didn't count it out myself, but he ran a 4.5. I kind of expected a little bit faster than that, but that's still pretty fast. He's still 5'9", 165, and he's little, but he's certainly got the strength to make things happen. I think this offense is really going to fit him. I think going back to those coaches, though, one of the things that really stuck out to me that first week, and I don't know if they are able to do this moving forward, but all those position coaches were in there spotting guys and watching what's going on, and Coach Prime was right in the middle of all of it. And I think that's going to be a big difference this year, that a lot of these coaches are going to be far more involved in it all the way through.
Walk-on running back transfer Bryce Hicks is on campus. He looked good in the weight room as well. You mentioned Sac State receiver transfer Ernest Campbell ran a 4.33. He's got legit speed. He ran a 10.02 at Texas A&M, competing with the Aggies track team earlier in his college career. So he's probably the fastest on the team, I would imagine. I don't think there's much of a debate this year, is there?
Well, I think Quentin Gibson's right up there too. I mean, we're talking about him getting down to a 4.2 as well. So I think both of those two guys are sort of similar to each other, both in size and speed. And I think they'll compete with each other to see who's the fastest. Yeah. But then, you know, all that speed doesn't mean anything unless you can translate it into game speed, you know, and it's different with pads and everything else. But both of those guys have shown that they can do that. Now it remains to be seen for Gibson. Can he do it at receiver consistently, and can Campbell do it at this level? But, you know, whatever you want to say about all of it, it's better to have that speed than not have it.
On day three of the footage from the spring semester, Michael Rhodes, the head of security for Coach Prime, revealed that they get about 5 death threats every day. Like, what the hell is wrong with people, William? What the hell?
Well, like, you know, I mean, it's like this. There's how many? There's 300 million people in the United States, some odd like that, right? You know, I don't know.
I guess
1% of them are complete assholes. That's a lot of assholes, you know. And
that's true.
You watch the national news outside of sports, and you see all kinds of things, you know. And I'm going to be very careful about commenting on that.
Sure,
but
you know, I'm sorry. That's jarring to me. Like, what the hell?
But listen, you know, like, you know, Coach Prime is a very visible. And I'll say right out, he is controversial to some people. Now, you know, I'm gonna say this, and some people are gonna get mad about it, but you know, a white dude who's got a big personality like Coach Prime never seems to be a problem. But for a black man to have that seems to be a problem for some people. But I would also say, you know, the Pope gets death threats like that too, you know. So there are just some bad, crazy people out there who hate. You know, and whether it's Coach Prime or whatever else, I do think it's a big function of race in Coach Prime's case. But, you know, everybody that's famous gets that kind of stuff. It's kind of nuts.
Yeah, it really is. Was it Tupac that said he'd rather be rich than famous? Like, give me the money in my bank account. Like, who wants that in their life? You know, dealing with that on a daily basis. Jesus. Yeah.
Right. And I think that's one of the things about, you know, being getting your name out there and being famous is you attract all kinds of crazy people to you when you got money and fame. And I don't know what people's problem is, but they want to be attracted to it, and it attracts some sick people. And that's why, you know, like, you know, talking to a friend is talking about, you know, heard about somebody getting robbed or I don't know, all these kinds of things too. And I'm like, that's why I'm glad of being nobody, man. You know, nobody's targeting me except for the 5 people in our chat right now, you know.
No, we've got over 200 people in there.
Oh, well, okay.
Right. Don't sell us short. Come on now. We've got a lot more to talk about. Let's on the other side of this break, William, start talking about the staff and kind of some of these changes. Where they've got a new cornerbacks coach. Kevin Mathis is going to move to Nichols coach, but you know what time it is right now here.
Yeah, and I think we'll, you know, I'll, as we go through, I'll drop a few other, like, it'd probably jar my memory, and I'll drop in thoughts of other things I've seen in the videos and what have you, and individual players and what else, and what I see about some of those staff in the weight room and such.
Sounds great. It is Taco Tuesday, so it really is perfect timing for this announcement. Taco Bell, they're excited to share that they are officially bringing back the iconic Quesarito for a limited time. And you know what that means for Denver fans, because Nikola Jokic was drafted by the Denver Nuggets with the 41st pick in the NBA draft. And during this time, the telecast had cut out to commercial, which featured the launch of Taco Bell's Quesarito. So this cemented a legacy connection between Taco Bell and the Joker. And the Joker is now officially tied to the Quesarito. And he's a believer. So if you're a Nuggets fan, a Buffs fan, Taco Bell has been supporting sports across the Front Range. And this is a great way to support your local favorite team. Even better is that Taco Bell has brought back its spicy volcano sauce to pair with the Quesarito to take up the heat another level. So get to Taco Bell and celebrate the Joker and pick up the Volcano Quesarito today. And while you're at it, don't forget to grab something from Taco Bell's crispy chicken menu. It could be a taco, burrito, or strips. Taco Bell's crispy chicken delivers every single time. And with the football playoffs taking full effect, be the hero of the party and don't forget to pick up a crispy chicken game day pack featuring chicken strips, soft tacos, and Taco Bell's amazing nacho fries. This is definitely a winning combination. Live Moss at Taco Bell. And on Taco Tuesday, you can really get bang for your buck with a $7 Supreme Lux box. It's going to come with a beefy five-layer burrito, chicken chalupa supreme, crunchy taco, and cinnamon twist. I know what's going to be William Gardner's next order when he goes to Taco Bell. When's the last time you had Taco Bell? Going to get it today, where were you going? Where are you going on this menu?
Well, I would put it this way. It's like, you know the old show Cheers, and that dude would walk in, Norm, everybody, hey, Norm.
Of course, yeah.
I walk into my local's Taco Bell, it's like, hey, Bill.
That's so awesome. Where are we going on the menu if you're ordering today?
I don't know. I always say to myself, anytime I go places, I'm going to try something different, and I always end up getting the same damn thing because I'm just a creature of habit. But I don't know. The beefy five-layer burrito is always a good thing, you know. So
yeah, we got a lot of different boxes here. Yeah. We've got we're going to get Taco Bell this week at some point. I'm going to try some of these new items. I might go with the I've already done the Cantina chicken burrito. What am I going to go with this time? And it's hard to make these decisions.
That's lots of variety.
Yeah. So we love our Taco Bell. And if you've tuned into Buff Stampede Radio anytime recently, you know that already.
So I want to point you towards somebody on the chat. Educator Run Pleasant said, I would definitely rob you guys. Well, the laugh's on you, pal, because you ain't get first rule of robbery, rob from somebody that actually got something on them. me and Adam broke, dude. And yeah. there's my friend Waco girl. She got my back. So watch it, man.
Thanks for tuning in, guys. Appreciate all the participation in the chat. Taco Bell today will have you. now, come on now. You gotta make other decisions in your life that are not gonna do that.
I took it a good way that you'll run fast and with.
Okay. I like that. Well, we'll take it that way.
He didn't say run like old Ralphie.
So Aaron Fletcher was announced as CU's new cornerbacks coach, and Kevin Mathis moving over to Nichols coach. Rashad Davis listed as inside receivers coach with Coach Phillips, Jason Phillips remaining as the outside receivers coach. The three-headed coaching monster on the offensive line returns. Any thoughts on some of those staff announcements, especially the fact that, Jason Phillips is going to coach the outside guys and Shad is going to coach the inside guys, and then on defense, Mathis, the nickel guys, and you're going to have Fletcher coaching the corners.
Yeah, I pulled up the coaching staff page, but they haven't updated it. I was hoping to have that list there, but I think one of the biggest additions in this offseason, beyond Brendan Marion at offensive coordinator and Coach Marv at linebackers, is Coach Niblett as the tight ends coach. And you know, somebody in the chat mentioned his demeanor on the field, and this is a guy that's won like 7 or 8 state championships in Florida football. And so some people might dismiss him as just another high school coach, but that's not a correct way to look at it. This guy is motivational. He's hardworking. He's a no-nonsense guy. He knows how to win football games. And just watching him out there on the field and in the weight room this past week, he was impressive, you know, and I think he's going to make a big difference in terms of attitude and those tight ends and how they play, and really just to the whole team in general. I think one thing that's interesting to me is that there's no way to look at Coach Hart and Coach Mathis except that they got demoted, because instead of having an entire group there, you know, Hart is now the assistant linebacker coach and Mathis is down to a smaller group of guys. I think that the guys that they brought in to either, however you want to put it, assist or work with them, are both great additions. I think that Coach Marv for linebackers is fantastic. And who's the new cornerback coach? You just said it.
Aaron Fletcher.
Aaron Fletcher.
Yeah. Aaron Fletcher. Yeah, he comes over. He was a co-DC assistant head coach at Abilene Christian. He's coached in the secondary at Arizona State, Tulsa, Houston Christian, 3 high schools in the Dallas area. Yeah. Played at Texas A&M Commerce, later in the Arena Football League. I got to tell you, William, being a corner in the Arena Football League was probably not an easy task back in the day. It does the Arena League still live on? Like, I have not seen an arena game in
many years. I don't know. I think it's always a plus when you hire a former defensive coordinator or offensive coordinator as a position coach, and we've got 2 of them now in Marv and Fletcher. And I think that's a huge addition in terms of knowledge and professionalism and what have you, that now I think, as I'm thinking about it, at every position on defense, we should have somebody who I think is what I call as a professional coach, you know. And I don't know. I mean, I think there's some coaches on the staff that are there, or they started there because they're Coach Prime's friends. But now I think we've got everybody pretty much on the staff who is a professional. So I think these additions are very exciting and going to make a big difference. You know, I think that our cornerback play suffered last year, and I think this should help make it better. So we'll see about that. You know, the only one that's kind of question mark remaining is Phillips at wide receiver, but I don't have any concerns about that because I know who Brendan Marion is, and I know what he's going to demand of his offense. You know, not going to be an assistant coach. This is, you can't even compare him to Shermer, you know, in terms of hunger and organization, and he's not going to let his assistant coaches just slide by. So I'm excited about what this coaching staff brings to the table. It was fun watching Hilo, edge coach George Hilo, in there spotting those guys on the bench, spotting the defensive lineman, and standing right next to him was big Domata Peko. I heard him say it, so I know that's how he says it, Domata Peko. And it was fun to me to watch all those assistant coaches in there working with these guys, encouraging them, and being right in the mix this time around, which I don't recall in previous season. Maybe I just forgot it. But I think we're going to have a lot more hands-on. I think, you know, seeing Coach Prime, and every time they were out there, he was out there. Now, he was, you know, I think he's being careful about the foot and staying off of it and doing more sitting. But I think that's good just to have him out there. And it demonstrates to the players that they're being seen at the highest level on the staff, and that the coach cares enough to be there. So that's all good stuff. And I'm excited about where we're going with this staff. I think, you know, We've absolutely improved this staff. You know, linebacker coach is better. Offensive coordinator is like, you know, so much better. I can't even quantify it, you know. So it should be exciting. you know, I think we got some talent in here. It's always easy to be optimistic. Well, usually easy to be optimistic this time of year. You and I have both been here in years when even in January you couldn't find much optimism. But there's a lot of talent out there, you know. So I don't know. What do you think about it?
Well, I want to go back to Josh Niblett. And there's some comments here that people are kind of comparing him to Tim Brewster. I don't really want to take shots at Tim Brewster because I do think that he's a passionate person. But Josh Niblett, like, he comes with a little bit more substance. In this quote that he had from this past week, he said, quote, "Don't forget about this every day you work out. They thought they buried us, but they didn't know we were seeds. So think about that every day." Again, I'm not trying to compare him to Tim Brewster. They're different people. They both have passion. Josh Niblett, though, seems to kind of have a little bit more substance behind that. I mean, like you said, he's a high school coach, but man, he's been raising up young men for a long period of time. This is the type of energy you want in this program.
It's
versus a guy that's kind of been a journeyman in college and the NFL.
Well, it's an entirely different kind of passion and energy. And I think one thing that's very important about it is, you know, he spent his career the last decade and more with high school age students. So he knows how to connect with and address kids of this age group. You know, I mean, Tim Brewster to me is kind of weird for me to say this, but he's a throwback to the 50s almost. But I think Niblett is far more impressive to me, both as a motivator and as a coach. And I think we're going to see a lot more out of him. And I think he's going to be an important part of this process. And I think it's also good because he, you know, he has a connection back through the years with Coach Prime, but he's also, you know, he's going to be a great asset in recruiting Florida, which is a big darn deal too.
So about 5 weeks till spring ball starts, they have kind of intimated who are the leaders on this football team by the folks that went up there in front of the team and spoke to them. They chose Ben Finneseth to talk about being smart. His speech was great. He might be a shoo-in for the 2026 Buffalo Heart Award, right?
Well, that's still a bit of a sore subject, I would think.
I know. Can we go back and just give it to him for last year and then get somebody else this year?
Maybe I'll go somewhere with a baseball bat and get the other one back. Maybe I shouldn't say that.
Tough was tight end Zach Adkins, who ran the 4.5, which was that's good.
Well, it's interesting that they chose him for Tough, you know, because you would expect off the top of your head like a linebacker or a defensive tackle or maybe an offensive line or something. So that says something to me about what they've seen from Adkins in terms of his toughness as a player, because you're not going to pick somebody that doesn't embody that on the field and in a weight room. And he's a guy, you know, you look at him and he's put on, I don't know, basically 50 pounds since he got to college, basically just through hard work and kept that speed. So he's a guy who is, I think, a natural leader in terms of his work ethic and what have you. And I think he's going to be great in that role and really give us a weapon at tight end as well.
Fast was cornerback R.J. Johnson. Discipline was punter Damon Greaves. Character was Yo-Yo, of course, Yaya Atia. And then the summary of program expectations was sent down to quarterback Dominic Ponder, who is a walk-on in the program arm for them this coming year. And so Dominic Ponder kind of warned the team that Swayze is going to get you guys real here coming up soon. And we saw that
there's a couple of
weekend.
There, I thought it was funny with Yaya talking about character because he is such a character, but that's not even what he's talking about. But I think he's a great example of that as well, you know, and doing the right thing. He's another guy to stay here. And Yaya could play anywhere in the country. I mean, he's got that kind of talent. Yeah, I think he showed enough that probably people came asking about him, but he's a buff all the way through. And then I think it says a lot about Dominic Ponder that they had him speak about team expectations, and it shows a dedication to the team and the program that he has, and that they think he's more than just a nobody. So that was an interesting choice. And I think, you know, you take some things out of this, and If Dominic Ponder can give us some solid depth in there and give us a good scout team or whatever, that's going to be a positive for the program moving forward. And it's also, you know, if you got a guy who understands the expectations and he's your scout team quarterback, then you're probably not going to have guys just going through the motions on, you know, that scout team, which is important.
Yep, no doubt. There's not going to be profanity outside of the meeting rooms going forward. I'm actually a fan of that. Like, handle yourself with class. Like, you gotta. There's a time and place for everything.
Well, I'm probably the last guy to comment on profanity and foul language. I don't know. You know, I spent 10 years total in the Marine, enlisted in the Marine Corps and the Navy. And anybody who's been in the Marine Corps, you won't hear a sentence that doesn't have the F word in it, and that's just reality. So, and the Marine Corps to me is one of the most professional organizations I've ever been in. But I get it. You know, I get it. It's an entirely different thing. You know, they're trying to play a sport and teach them to be men in the CU football program. Whereas, you know, at the bottom line, people ask me what was the difference between the Marine Corps and the Navy. And I say, well, you know, in the Marine Corps they taught me to kill people. That's the job. Ultimately, you know, so a little bit of profanity there is a different thing. One thing I want to address, and I'm glad somebody brought this up because I've seen it on our board as well. Somebody on there on the chat says, are you disappointed to see Sapp still on the staff? And I don't get that. He's not a position coach. He's an analyst. And should we have added another guy to the defensive line staff? Well, no, because we already got it. The defensive line is two positions and they got a coach for each position already. You know, and there's not enough difference. There's basically two defensive tackles and two edge guys, you know, and essentially the techniques are close to the same for either one. So you don't need an extra guy there. Coach Sapp's he's a staff member in a term.
He represents the University of Colorado. He's part of the staff. Okay, so if he makes any bad decisions, then it's a bad look for CU. I don't know what those conversations look like in terms of kind of his demeanor. I like Warren Sapp. I enjoy his energy. I just want CU football not to face any type of negative backlash from.
Well, I don't give a damn about that. I'm sick to death of us being the choir boys and getting our ass kicked every year because we're such, you know, and I don't mind Warren Sapp and his approach to life or whatever. Like somebody said on our board, you know, he's not beating up his wife or, you know, getting arrested or things like that. But, Georgia every year got guys getting arrested for everything from rape to freaking close to homicide. Do they keep them out of the playoffs for that? No, nobody cares at a larger level. Win games is really what people care about. And, you know, that's why, you know, Warren Sapp is here. He's a part-time coach. That's been the deal from the start so that he could do his other stuff. So he comes in. You know, what I see when he's coaching on the field is he's a good coach and he reaches these guys, you know, and he teaches them technique in a very specific technical fashion. So I don't get the problem with it. You know, I don't know. Again, I think I know what it is, and I've already said it once in this.
Yeah, you're good. Let's get back to some good stuff. But we did have a message here from Rob J4449. Hey, William, I was 2nd Battalion, San Diego Camp Pendleton. Somebody else said, thank you for your service, Dan O _ Squo.
Thank you for your service. I think I'm guessing that I was in the Marine Corps a lot earlier than you were.
We had one more. Oh, here we go. CU Buffs 34 asked or said, especially if Dan Lanning is in the room with William. He was responding to us talking about profanity. If you got kids in the car, turn it on mute for 10 seconds. Well, you want to just drop all the F bombs you can towards this guy.
Only thing I want to say,
in pools with kids.
Only thing I want to say about sweet Danielle, or what I would say to him, would be nonverbal.
Okay.
And it'd be things I learned in the Corps, ironically.
He's coming after Valor Christian's quarterback, who has got strong ties to Washington. So we'll see how that works out for him. See if he jumps in the swimming pool with him as well. There was a really cool moment between Coach Prime and Chauncey Gooden. where did you see that, where he kind of he went out there and kind of walked Chauncey down? I mean, they were really putting them through the ringer, and Chauncey's obviously one of the biggest guys, if not the biggest guy on the team right now. So I thought that was a cool moment.
Yeah, I think that was good. There's comment on the text, which just illustrates my point. I don't need to make it a third time, but that kind of, it's ironic that you're talking about using foul language and you call somebody that name. Okay, whatever, you do you, pal.
Who are you talking about?
Somebody said you can win and not be a scumbag. You know, that to me says everything I need to know. You know, it's like, and again, I don't think we need to go down this line again, but I don't know. I think that's just disappointing to me. But you know, anyway, let's move on.
Let's talk about Johnny Mack taking over the running backs room. He's the guy that actually has been recruiting from that room, kind of like Shad from the receivers room here recently. I'm anxious to see what he can do with that group. You know, it was cool bringing in another Gold Jacket and Marshall Faulk, but I mean, from an actual overall program impact standpoint, that was kind of limited from 1 year, right?
Well, I didn't think there's any point, you know. You might as well have not had a running back coach in Shermer's offense, because the offense wasn't designed in any way, shape, or form to help running backs look good. But even with that said, I think that Marshall Faulk did a good job with those guys, and I thought they looked pretty good within the significant constraints of that particular offense. I think this particular offense is very running back friendly, and now, you know, we've brought in an assistant to him who was the running backs coach in this offense. So there's going to be plenty of understanding of the offense amongst the coaches in that room. And there's a lot of different things that are going to be required from running backs in this offense that weren't necessarily required from them in the past offense. And they're going to be both receivers out of the backfield. They're going to have to be good at the zone and have vision and patience. They're going to have to be able to maintain pitch relationship in the legitimate option with the quarterback and catch a ball being pitched to him that way. So there's a lot, and they got a block. You know, Coach Marion said you won't play in this offense unless you can block. So they have to put all those things together.
Yep, no doubt. Good stuff there. And
but that being said, the other thing though, like a guy like DeKalen Taylor, you know, at 5'9", 165, can really shine in this offense, because you're not going to ask him to run between the tackles and play smash mouth. You're going to put him out in situations where he can get the ball with space and make people look stupid.
We've got some more topics to run through. We're going to talk about Prime's new fines. Savelle Small shared why he had to medically retire. Jordan Seaton to LSU. We get some other things we're going to talk about. Shedeur Sanders to the Pro Bowl. We're going to go through some of these topics on the other side of this break. Is your business growing but not quite ready for a full-time CFO? Macaulay Capital offers fractional CFO services for companies doing more than $3 million in annual revenue. You get expert financial leadership without the full cost. Learn more about how you can improve your business's profitability and cash management at MacaulayCapital.com. If you know Boulder, you know the Hungry Toad. We've been serving this town since 1991, long before the lines on Pearl Street. Just north of campus, we're your local British pub with proper fish and chips, quality burgers, a scratch kitchen, real English cask ale, and no tourist fluff. We support CU football, women's soccer, and the loyal fans who keep it local. The Hungry Toad, Boulder born, Buffs proud. All right, welcome back into the show. The Hungry Toad, we got to get back there. We see that every darn week. Our guy Hanson Rada is going to hook us up, I'm sure, next time we get back there. What are your thoughts on these new fines? I've seen some stuff out there on social media that this is something that not only Colorado is doing, but other programs. I love it personally. You're going to pay these guys. They're not technically employees, but shoot, I've been self-employed for 23 years working for, Yahoo and CBS Sports. And if you don't show up, there's repercussions, you know? And so I think that's a kind of a no brainer to me to implement this.
Yeah. And real quick, I want to mention somebody on the, they were chatting about he who shall not be named and where he wound up. But the one of the posters mentioned his cousin, Javon McFadden, who's an offensive guard from Ohio State. Yeah. His film does look really good. I mean, he's a huge pickup, literally. But he, to me, is very similar to Chauncey Gooden, except I think Chauncey Gooden is significantly bigger and ahead of McFadden. But those two, with Atia, it gives us a future insight on the offensive line. It's pretty fascinating, pretty exciting to me. But, you know, maybe someday you get to talk to McFadden. I'd be love to hear the background story on that, how he wound up here under all the circumstances. But to go back to your question, I think that having fines for things is a sort of like a symbol, I guess, of the new college football, you know, where guys get paid, you can actually fine them. I also still think that there's other ways that you can instill discipline on a team. And I've been with good coaches for this, and I've been good with it myself, you know. So, like, when I coach the defensive line or the offensive line, if you had mental mistakes like jumping off sides or early starts or whatever, you know, there was going to be an immediate repercussion right there in practice, you know. And so guys learned right off the bat to not do those kinds of things. So I think there's a lot of ways to instill discipline in players. You know, I had a psych professor one time talking about no punishment. And so, whatever punishment you come up with, there are some people for whom it won't be a punishment, you know. So fines to some guys, they won't care, you know, and you got to find what is their buttons, you know, whether it's playing time or what have you. But at the end of the day, it's just one more tool, I think, in terms of how to enforce these kinds of things. I do think it suggests that Coach Prime is going to be more serious this year about the kind of infractions that happened last year. And I think if you look at that first by last week or last year, we were a different team coming out of that bye than we were going in, because going into that bye, we had played some very good teams toe to toe. We came out of it and we got blown out. So I think part of that has to do with some of the discipline issues and guys coming back late and what have you. I think there's more to it than that I don't know about, but I think this is Coach Prime taking a more serious approach to I guess what I would call smaller infractions and try to keep that stuff all in line. And it's a message to guys that you're going to be held accountable. I also think that him being in the room, in the weight room and out in the indoor practice facility when they're working, is the same message. You know, I'm watching, and you got a bunch of new guys here and everybody's starting off fresh, and, you know, playing time is going to be earned. It's not going to be handed out.
Yeah. Coach Prime getting on the bench press. Impressive. I'm getting the itch. I've been getting back and working out a little bit, but not to the point that I used to be. And I can't wait to like try to push that max and, you know, become the old guy in the gym that is asking for a spotter across the gym. I'm looking
forward.
He's giving me some inspiration.
I don't really do bar lifts anymore. I do dumbbells and
okay,
you know, at my age, I'm trying to do less weight and more repetitions and all that kind of stuff. But next time you see me in person, I think you'll see a difference. But there's a chat. And here's a scary thought. I'm thinking maybe one of these times when I get in good enough shape, I'll do this, you know, without a shirt or something. Give everybody a show.
With the fan going back there.
Right. Yeah. You know. That'd be scary. Then we'd have no listeners after that at all. But somebody mentioned on the chat about did we think it's an accident that leaked about the fines? And I'm gonna tell you right now, there are no accidents leaking out of that program. Everything that comes out on video from any of those insider platforms is planned and is done because that's the way they want it. The only information that comes out of that program right now is what Coach Prime wants to be put out, you know, and it's only going to be put out in the way he wants it. Now, I don't personally agree with that. I don't agree with that at all. I think that's wrongheaded, but I'm not in charge of the program, and that's his choice of how to do that. But no, it's not an accident by any means.
I have been as strong a proponent of Deion, Coach Prime Sanders, as is possible given my lack of access. And I don't hold any, it's like one of those things, it's like, it's your prerogative, but I see some things that are toxic that are happening as a result of these media policies that, frankly, the previous six coaches I covered in Boulder, when they started going down this route, it didn't go well. And so I went into this offseason really hoping for some more changes as far as that goes. But again, I don't know. I enjoy talking to you. I enjoy covering the Colorado Buffaloes. I like watching these behind-the-scenes videos. I'd like to do my job. Can't do it right now. It is what it is.
Well, it doesn't make any sense, and it's stupid. You know, it's like you're what college football is an entertainment industry, okay? And you need exposure, you know, and you need positive exposure. And you and Brian at the Daily Camera, you guys provide positive exposure. Now, I understand that there's some journalists out there who are not good people and don't do the right thing. So keep them out and let the good people in, because at the end of the day, what you want to do is reach fans and get fans to show up and increase excitement about your program. So locking out the media entirely and only letting what I think are sycophants and backside kissers in on the inside be the only ones to provide information doesn't make any sense to me.
So Dolph McDonald decommitted from the Buffaloes. He was their 2027 verbal commit. His older brother is joining the Buffaloes this spring. They added a couple long snapper walk-on additions. We're not going to spend a whole lot of time on that. Jordan Seaton officially to LSU. Or are we just going to, we'll probably skip by that. Yeah, do you want to share anything there?
Nope. Never been an LSU fan. Certainly won't be now.
I mean, I think there's going to be a lot of people cheering against them based on Lane Kiffin kind of ripping Ole Miss's hearts out of their souls. Going back to Sabell Smalls, I mentioned him earlier. It goes back to that point that, I think Coach Prime has said this too, right, is that you never know what somebody's dealing with, you know. And
right.
We were like, where's Sabell Smalls? He kind of disappeared. Zach Atkins got most of the reps at tight end. And he reveals that he had a very serious medical condition that he tried to like cover up for a bit. And I get it. Like, you're trying to maximize your athletic potential. But just kind of a sad story overall, because I thought Sabell was really coming into his own, or going to this year, this past year as a tight end.
Yeah, and he was really coming along the year before and showing real progress. And you know, the sort of thing he's dealing with health-wise is scary as hell, you know. And
yeah,
there are some unscrupulous, I wouldn't even call them journalists, but, you know, click chasers out there, I guess, to quote my least favorite person, who, you know, one of these idiots said something about, you know, playing for Coach Prime and all almost being paralyzed. But the reality is that he hid it from everybody. And as soon as it came out, he was not playing anymore. So the staff and the medical staff did put his health and long health first and made that the priority. So people trying to spin that are sick people. I don't know. You know, to me, the whole thing is a sad thing for Sabell Smalls, you know, to have that. First of all, it's scary as hell. To have that happen to you. But, you know, it's better for his long-term health that he doesn't play the sport. And it's too bad, because he came out of high school with as much hype as, you know, he who shall not be named, and it just didn't work out for him for a variety of reasons. And now it finally has come to an end, and that's too bad, because he gave it his all and he's a good person by all accounts. And I think, I don't know. It's just one of those things that happens sometimes. And, we all wondered why he wasn't part of the mix this year. Now we know.
Yeah. Bank Z7797 wrote in our chat, are you aware of the media restrictions for players to partake in podcasts or interview, i.e. how Reach the People did in the past? Would love to see new players and talk football impact and choice of CU. I don't want to belabor this point, but yeah, no, this is it's very much a three people can do that. The other people can't. Let's go to your thoughts on the CU's 2026 schedule. Dates and times, TV has not been announced, or I guess just dates and opponents, not TV and time, was announced since our last show. Any thoughts starting out on the road quite a bit here, William?
Yeah, let me pull it up here real quick so I can reference it directly. My first thought in looking at it to me is that it's not all that daunting of a schedule, quite frankly. I think there's a lot of teams in this conference that are, I don't know, rebuilding or resetting themselves up the way a lot of other teams like we are. You know, I think we're at Georgia Tech and they're not going to be the same team by any means. You know, they lost a great quarterback and they're going to be doing a lot of rebuilding this year too. That should be a tough game, but we had them here last year when they were really good and really came down to the last play almost to beating them. So
yeah,
I think, you know, Weber State should be a fairly easy game for us, but then, you know, at Northwestern, you never know what you get with Northwestern. I think, you know, they were not world beaters this past year by any means, you know, 7-6. So they're a 500 team. And we should be, I think we should look pretty good against them. You know, a lot of people will make, they'll say, well, we've got a new offense and so many new players, but a lot of other teams are doing that same kind of thing. So I don't know. I look at this schedule and there's nobody unbeatable on it. Best team we'll face is likely Texas Tech. We get them in Boulder. Utah is ranked 25 in some preseason polls, and I don't get that. Utah is going to burn to the ground. I would be shocked.
You don't think there's going to be like a some kind of like a new Heisel period of where there's still the remnants of the Kyle Whittingham and before him or Urban Meyer tradition has kind of like seeped into that program? Because I got the Polynesian pipeline still there in Salt Lake City.
But here's the difference. You know, back in the 90s, when Rick Neuwiesel took over, you guys couldn't just transfer and leave. So you got that carryover because everybody was still there the next year. But a lot of guys have left that Utah program, and Whittingham took the lion's share of the coaching staff with him to Michigan. And so it's going to be a total rebuild to me. You know, we even got one of their backup quarterbacks. So I think Utah, to me, is going to fall right off the table. But we'll see. You know, I mean, who knows? You know, Oklahoma State starting over again, I don't think they're going to be all that great. You know, Arizona State will continue to be good as long as they got the same coach, I think. Beyond that, there's really nobody on this schedule that's all that scary. I don't know.
Yeah, no, it's not a daunting schedule. It's a challenging schedule early on.
Yeah,
is what I would say.
Yeah, you know, the on the road stuff makes some of those games more challenging, I think, than they would be in Boulder. But we'll find out a lot more about this team, and I think we need to be ready. Well, we can win every game on this schedule. I think Texas Tech, they have bought themselves a playoff level team every year, and so they're going to be a tough out. But I think every other game on here, we could win. So I don't know. You look at this schedule, and like somebody said to me, it's like, you know, it's anywhere from 4 wins to 10 wins. Looking at this, schedule.
You get through the first half of the schedule with a winning record, I think then your expectations can really rise for this program.
And I think
three, you're kind of like, okay, what bowl game is possible? Because the back half of the schedule is easier. But you got to find a way, like going up to Northwestern. That is one of those games where, like, you got to win that game. You got to win that game.
And I think this team will need, you know, for cohesion and to come together, they're going to need some early success. The thing that really excites me is this offense. And assuming that Marion gets it all put in the way he wants in spring and ball and fall camp, and I'm very confident that he will, because that's the kind of personality he is, the kind of driven personality. I think this, his offense with some of the talent we've got on this team, is going to be very potent. And I think a lot of these teams are not going to be able to handle it in any way, shape, or form.
Shedeur Sanders was named to the Pro Bowl yesterday. These all-star games are kind of ridiculous at this point. And this is not a shot at Shedeur Sanders. I think if I'm running the Pro Bowl, that's like the first person I want to have on my board because it's going to draw in ratings. But just NFL all-star games in general, unless you're a 12 or 13-year-old kid, I don't think you can enjoy a football all-star game in any format, can you?
I don't know. You know, they way back in the day, they used to have a college all-stars versus NFL all-stars game. It was kind of interesting. But I think
that'd be fun, yeah. They were actually trying back then, right?
Well, the college guys certainly were because, you know, they're trying to get seen. I think I think what matters about this, I don't care about the all-star game aspect of it, but I think the larger issue here is that Shedeur Sanders made a lot of people look stupid with the early comments about his abilities and the dropping in the draft. And I see now the Cleveland coach, you know, is, I think he was very clearly sabotaged in that program, and yet he still rose above it, you know, and did enough to get this. I think it's still an honor.
And held class with Kevin Stefanski the whole time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Never once said anything bad about him when there were opportunities too.
We were
all doing it behind the scenes for him.
And I think, you know, you look at like you don't expect a rookie to come in and be polished at quarterback in the NFL. I don't care who it is, you know. But then you take the fact that he never got any reps with the first or second team all through camp and through most of the first half of the season, and he got thrown in, and then he starts to get the reps with the first team. You know, what Shedeur did on the field this year is really remarkable, you know, and I think it speaks to really good things coming down the road. I don't know if anybody can do really good things in that organization, but we'll see.
Yeah. We will see. It doesn't look like there's a lot of head coaches lining up, knocking down the doors, trying to take over that job right now.
And the other thing that strikes me is, you know, most of what Shedeur did, and this is mind blowing, what I'm going to say, is he did behind an offensive line that was worse than he had here. I mean, two or three of those guys, I mean, some of those guys were free agent guys who would never start except for all the injuries they had. So, you know, he did it behind that offensive line, and they really don't have any, big time talent outside the tight end who got hurt. So, you know, he did that pretty much without the assistance of great talent around him.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's close out the show with a really random question here, William.
I just want to mention a couple things on my notes.
Let's go.
One guy that think people need to keep an eye on, who I thought this before I saw him in the video, is Xavier Payne, the big offensive tackle. Mm-hmm. That dude is huge. You see him in the videos in the weight room and stuff, and he's a good 3 inches taller than anybody else around him. So 6'7". You know, 330, he's legit. Watching him move in some of the agility stuff is really exciting. He is going to be a good player and might be sooner than people think. And then I also
What's his projected position? Right tackle, left tackle, hard to say at this point?
I would say likely right tackle, but I don't know. I mean, based on what I see in terms of out there on the indoor facility, he looks agile enough for me to play left tackle. You know, somebody got to play out there. I wouldn't think he'd be the starter at left tackle as a true freshman, but who knows? You know, I think sometimes there's a lot of hype about guys, and everybody assumes they're going to be the starter. That he wasn't such a hyped guy, but he certainly has the talent level to be out there. I don't know that a left versus right tackle makes a big difference in this offense. The value of a left tackle is in a drop back passing offense, protecting the blind side of the quarterback, right? So, for example, if you have a left-handed quarterback, the left tackle is not as important. But we're not going to do a lot of that drop back, you know, and protect the guy for 4 seconds stuff. So I'm not sure the left tackle matters. What you're going to need is guys who can run block and who are good enough at pass protection to allow you to keep that part of the game going. So I think Xavier Payne looks to me like a guy who could get into the mix early, but we'll see in spring how ready he is. But he looked great. Another guy I noticed that kind of stood out to me was defensive lineman Tyler Moore, who's listed at 6 foot, 300. I'm not sure he's 6 foot. But man, is he thick. Holy crap. That guy, it just huge. Kind of looks like Nwankwo, like Block Bully, you know. And yeah. I always hate to make comparisons like that, you know, because of how good Nwankwo was for us. But boy, they sure looked the same out of pads.
Yeah, that's good stuff. Any more notes before we close out the show?
No, I think that's what I got for now.
It's good stuff. Yeah, we've had a long show. We've gone for about a minute and 15, thanks to Derek Webb for getting us into the show at the beginning for our live audience to come in. To close out, if you had to travel back to a date and time, what would you choose and why? You'll never be able to return to the future.
Yeah, that part makes it suck. I'd go back and collect all the sports information, come back and get rich. But you go first.
Well, what drew this question is that I was watching my wife watch a show about James Franco, where it's on Netflix, where he goes back and he tries to save JFK from getting assassinated. Have you stumbled upon this show?
I think I know what you're talking about. I'm not sure I've watched
it, though. And he does what he wants to do, and then he travels back to the future, and it's like apocalyptic. So yeah. I'm very much into the butterfly effect. Like, I feel like you can't mess with history. Otherwise, it's going to mess some stuff up that you didn't anticipate. This is the lamest answer ever, William. Well, I'd be born in 79 again. Like, I got the childhood where you got to go out and just hang out in the neighborhood. I was outside all the time. Yeah, we had Nintendo. You'd play that for like an hour at the end of the day. But it wasn't like being on screens like our kids nowadays. And maybe every generation feels this way of like, we had it the best. But I loved growing up in that era where you still had kind of pre-internet. But then like I developed my own website and got published when I was 15 years old. So I did enjoy the internet coming into existence when it did. So I lucked out from the time I was born, I feel like. But if I had to go back and not change history, I'd probably move back to the 70s would be my choice if I had to pick one.
Yeah, and that's interesting because I was born in 64. And so to me, I wouldn't pick any date in history significantly earlier than that because I'm a modern dude, man. And first of all, I need my electric fan. So it's got to be in electricity years. Secondly, I need a toilet that flushes.
Need a Taco Bell.
Ain't going back to the outhouse days. And so I think, you know, I would say I would like to be born in the year 2000. I just pick it as sort of an even number. But I got my girlfriend's daughter is 17. And, you know, we talk all the time about the things she's going to see in her life. Because I talk, you know, like my grandfather was born in 1913 and died in 1995. And, you know, he started out, he was in Brooklyn. He was born in Brooklyn and they would come and light the gas lamps, you know, and everything was horse-drawn carriages. And he got to see dudes land on the moon, you know, and you think about like kids now, they're going to see stuff. If you live to be 80 and you were born recently, maybe it's scary. I don't know, but they're going to see stuff, you know, they're going to finally get that flying car I was promised back in the 70s on the damn Jetsons.
The Jetsons, yeah. I remember watching that. I'm like, the future's going to be so cool, man. Yeah. Like, I can't wait to get there. You just walk up and just push a few buttons and get a great meal served to you. Yeah. It's going to be great. You got robots doing the cleaning. Yeah.
There's going to be challenges, and I think there's no telling where this AI thing is going to go. I don't know.
It's a little scary.
I've seen The Matrix, baby, and I've seen Terminator, so, you know, I'm just saying. But I would have to be, I would like to be, you know, most of my life, born in 64 all the way up to, you know, like I was thinking back in the early 20s before I got the job that I had for 19 years. You know, I was substitute teaching, and it was a different world. You know, there we didn't have smartphones and didn't have the entire world at your fingertip, you know, and social media and all that kind of stuff, you know, and now it's an entirely different world. So to me, I'd like to be like, I'd like to be 25 right now for a lot of reasons. Let me ask you this. Do I get to know what I already know? Do I get to go back with what I already know?
Oh, that would be great, huh?
You put me back at 25 with what I know now, boy, and get the hell out of the way.
It might be trouble, though. Like, if you think about it, like, if you could go through your life, like, let's imagine you're back, like, in elementary school and you have the knowledge you have now. You're not going to be able to fit in, I don't think.
It'd be, yeah. Or if you're smart, you know, you do fit in.
that's a problem. So,
I hesitate to look at the comments. People probably like, what in the hell are we talking
about? No, we've only gotten positive comments in here, so it's all good. William is a gladiator.
Honestly, I'm 61 now, or am I 62? I got to do the math one of these days, but. No, I think I'm 61. I'll be 62 because of an even number, blah, blah, blah. Okay, whatever. And I'm not getting senile. I was always this stupid, okay? So don't start. But I look back on my past, and, you know, I got out of the Navy at 28 because I thought, hey, 10 more years is going to be forever. What an idiot. If I could go back in time in my own life, I would have stayed in the Navy and done 20, man.
Okay.
You know, gotten out, maybe gone to culinary school, become a chef or something like that. But I loved, you know, I was too young for when I was in the Corps. And then when I was in the Navy, it's like, I was in the Navy when things were just starting to change. And like, I remember the last year I was in the Navy and guys were like, hey, they're going to let women on boats. What do you think about that? I'm like, well, I don't like doing 6-month tours of a boat with 5,000 other dudes. So I'm all for it. But, I look back and I would have spent my, I don't know, the things you don't know when you make the biggest decisions in your life are too bad because you just don't have enough experience. So,
yeah,
I'm a gladiator in a world that doesn't value that. So,
well, I'll tell you, I wouldn't change a whole lot, but I would, wish that I had not seen so much bad football the last 25 years.
Yeah, right.
That's all I'm asking for is good, competent. Just send me to a bowl game. Send me to the Pop-Tarts Bowl with my wife.
Well, let's do it 2 years in a row for once.
Let's do it 2 years.
We haven't done 20 years. Maybe we can manage. Goodness gracious, so, yeah. I don't know.
Well. So, We kind of tailspinning here at the end of the show, but we're an hour and 22 minutes in, so that should be given some forgiveness there. But we've broken down the first full week of the strength and conditioning program. We're going to be back next week with William Gardner to break down more. William, thanks for doing this again.
Yeah, and I think we talked about we're going to start taking a closer look at some of these players and stuff that have come into the program. Yeah. I think that'll be fun.
I think next week that would be a good time to start that. We just had so much to get into today.
Yeah.
So much to dive into. So never a dull moment around CU.
Well, and I was just about to say, like, as always, there's always something controversial to talk about. And I guess that's probably true in any program, you know, but we're a little bit more.
It's kind of on steroids at CU, not like literally on steroids, just like the fines thing was something that other programs are implementing, but Colorado gets the attention because of Coach Prime, right?
Yeah. And the other thing is, I think about it real quick as my final note. One of the things I appreciated from some of the videos from this first week was how Coach Prime goes out of his way to really recognize some of the unknown people in the program. Like one time he had one of the managers, he was talking to him about his background. He was talking to some other kid in the weight room and really kind of celebrating the people who do a lot of work for the program but don't ever get recognized for it. And I always appreciate that.
Yeah, no doubt. That is unequivocally the greatest part of this additional access that Coach Prime provides with his three media team members there. with boots on the ground. So I appreciate you, William, for joining me again, and appreciate everybody for tuning in. We're going to be back next week. I'm going to do another podcast with Will Burnett next week. We're going to break down how everybody, all the former Buffs did in the NFL this year, kind of what their situation looks like going forward. Are there some draft potential guys going into the NFL in 2026? And then who are our top NFL prospects for 2027? So we're going to have that as well as BSR Live with William next week. Again, thanks for tuning in. It is Taco Tuesday, so it really is perfect timing for this announcement. Taco Bell, they're excited to share that they are officially bringing back the iconic Quesarito for a limited time. And you know what that means for Denver fans, because Nikola Jokic was drafted by the Denver Nuggets with the 41st pick in the NBA draft. And during this time, the telecast had cut out to commercial, which featured the launch of Taco Bell's Quesarito. So this cemented a legacy connection between Taco Bell and the Joker. And the Joker is now officially tied to the Quesarito. And he's a believer. So if you're a Nuggets fan, a Buffs fan, Taco Bell's been supporting sports across the Front Range. And this is a great way to support your local favorite team. Even better is that Taco Bell has brought back its spicy volcano sauce to pair with the Quesarito to take up the heat another level. So get to Taco Bell and celebrate the Joker and pick up the Volcano Quesarito today. And while you're at it, don't forget to grab something from Taco Bell's crispy chicken menu. It could be a taco, burrito, or strips. Taco Bell's crispy chicken delivers every single time. And with the football playoffs taking full effect, be the hero of the party and don't forget to pick up a crispy chicken game day pack featuring chicken strips, soft tacos, and Taco Bell's amazing nacho fries. This is definitely a winning combination. Live Moss at Taco Bell. And on Taco Tuesday, you can really get bang for your buck with a $7 Supreme Lux box. It's going to come with a beefy five-layer burrito, chicken chalupa Supreme, crunchy taco, and cinnamon twist. I know it's going to be William Gardner's next order when he goes to Taco Bell.